Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by iFixit. You can fix it, and iFixit makes it easy with free step-by-step repair guides, high-quality replacement parts, and all the tools you'll ever need. For $10 off your purchase of $50 or more, go to iFixit.com/twit and enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout. And by NatureBox. Order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like Honey Dijon Pretzels. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. On this episode of Know How, we're going deeper into bad USB. We're going to show you how to keep downloading your videos from YouTube, even though Google doesn't want you to do that anymore. Oh, and Project Lunchbox gets on its wheels, and we bring you some enterprise-class security for your home.
That was a lot.
I know, wow. Wait, we gotta redo this. That's way too much for one episode. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballister.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next, 45,
give or take 30 minutes.
This is going to be a long episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we're going to be bringing you some of the projects that we've been working on. And actually, we've got a really cool product that we want to bring into the show, just so that you could geek out in your own geek time.
Definitely. But before we do that, we should probably talk about something we did last week.
Yeah. So some people were asking us about that bad USB exploit.
Which was very scary.
It was super scary, because it's talking about the ability to reprogram any USB device to act like any other USB device.
Right.
There's no way to know, right.
It's
no transparency whatsoever. If you have a USB device that gets compromised, the only way to find out what it's doing is to ask the controller. And if the controller is the thing that's compromised, it's not going to tell you the truth. In a nutshell, okay, is bad USB.
All right. But so the question was, why can this happen to SD cards?
Yeah. So in the interview that I had with the researchers who found this, with mm-hmm. Karsten Knoll and Jakob Lell, they said if you want to do data transfer safely, why not use an SD card instead? And some of the know-it-alls picked up on that. They said, wait a minute. We heard about a hack of SD cards not too long ago, so shouldn't that mean that you can do the same things with SD cards that you do with a USB drive?
And what's the conclusion?
Conclusion is not so much.
Okay.
So you
can't. Just flash memory. There's not a USB controller inside it.
There's not a USB controller, but there is a programmable controller. And there were a few researchers who showed off a hack of using the controller inside of an SD card. And remember, this is any SD card. SD, micro SD, the nano SD they're releasing.
Yeah, the micro.
They're all electronically the same.
Okay.
Which is why you can take a micro SD card and you put it into that converter and then mm-hmm. you plug that into an mm-hmm. SD slot. They're all the same, but
that's what makes them so easy to use.
That's what makes them so easy to use. But the controller inside these things is incredibly lightweight.
I kind of expect that, because how long have SD cards been around? And they're supposed to be universal. You can plug and play in a multiple right. amount of devices. So, yeah.
But it's
what do you do?
It's also because they're single-purpose devices.
Yeah.
When we released the SD card, no one ever said, oh, we should probably make the controller robust enough so that we could do a bunch of different things.
Right.
A controller in an SD card is supposed to do one thing, and that is allow you access to the memory on the SD card.
As quickly as possible.
As quickly as possible, as quickly as the memory will allow.
Right.
Which means that even if you do hack the controller on an SD card, which is non-trivial, by the way, it wasn't designed to be updated from anything.
Mm-hmm.
You need some specialized equipment. You need to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You can't do a whole lot. You could do some redirections. Like, for example, you could have all the information on the SD card pumped to another spot, to another location, where you could retrieve it later on. but you can't make it mimic something else. Like, for example, there's no way of you plugging an SD card into the card reader on your laptop and your laptop thinking, oh, that looks like a printer.
Right, right.
Which is what happens with bad USB.
Whereas with the other one, yeah, the it could be a keyboard. It could be a mouse.
It could be a mouse. Yeah. It could be another storage device that's,
right.
that pushes. Or it could be a network adapter that will push things off in a tunneled VPN off-site. That's the nightmare. Now, if you go, Alex, go ahead and go to the product shot. Let me show you really quickly what we're talking about here. So this is an SD card right here. This is a standard 32 gigabyte SD card. Now, look at this. These are all USB flash drives. This one used to be a flash drive.
You kind of destroyed that one, right?
Yeah. But here on each one of these, and it's all the same controller. This is all the same model controller. These are all vulnerable to that bad USB device. Mm-hmm. Remember what we said, which is on this side, you've got the controller. And on this side, this is the actual flash memory chip. This
right.
is this is where all the storage takes place, right?
I think on one of these that I gave you is it's actually
that
just...
one. This is the one I wanted to show off. Look at this. So we've got the controller on this side, but on this side, that's actually an SD card.
Yeah.
That's a micro SD card that they've mounted on the back of a USB device, which tells you that you need that. You need the power of that controller in order to read that memory.
Right. And these are all just USBs that I got from, I think, you and Shannon when you went to CES.
Yes.
And I just, they're all 2 gigabytes, and I took them apart just to see what kind of what they look like inside.
And
I thought it was
kind of
funny that it was a micro SD card. Yeah.
You could actually pull that SD card off the back of that
and then
plug it into something. It would work just fine.
I thought about that. It looks like it's kind of stuck in there pretty good, but yeah.
So ultimately, when you think about bad USB, you have to think about not just that you can own the controller, because you can own the controller on a lot of things. You have to be able to own a controller that A, has enough power to do something else, and B, was designed to fill multiple roles.
Right.
And that's only with USB, that's not SD.
Gosh, what if these were getting owned at the at the manufacturer level?
That's I don't want to talk about that because that's kind of scary. Actually, we talked about that on Twite over a year ago.
Yeah, you talked to Kingston.
We had the Kingston guys in here, and they were saying how one of the things that they actually do that none of the other manufacturers do is they maintain control of all the raw materials until they receive the drives. And it's one of these things where they think this is enterprise grade. We can tell you with certainty, we've seen all of these pieces. There are no man in the middle attacks. Of course, unless someone intercepts them en route to be delivered. But most manufacturers use the same assembly line. And if there was a bad actor on that assembly line reprogramming the controllers, we would never know.
Right. So it's definitely scary. I guess it's kind of the security through obscurity. Just knowing that that's possible and there's not too much you can do about
it. You can do.
Can you desolder these?
The researchers who found this exploit, the way that they found it was they had to desolder the memory and then read the memory in a specialized reader to find out what was on it, because that's where the exploit gets stored. Because as long as that controller is there, the controller won't let you have access to the memory.
And who's going to do that?
No.
Nobody.
No.
Nobody's going to do that.
Now, you could on this one, this cool one with the, you could pull that off, and you could read that, and that would show you the code that's being used. So maybe that's a... that might be a know-how.
Should we make that a project?
I think we should. All right. So next time, we're going to show you how to do what a bunch of German researchers couldn't.
That's right.
Totally not. We're not doing that. Not at all. Now, Brian, one of the things that we've been doing a lot is we've been disassembling things.
I love taking things apart.
Yes.
Putting them back together is usually a little bit more difficult.
But it's optional, really.
I've heard. Yeah, yeah. If you have a few screws left over, that's like a weight reduction.
Who needs all that extra stuff if it still works? No, but now what we've been using to do our disassembly and to find out how things work is we've been using the iFixit Toolkit. In fact, we've got it out on the desk right now. We've been using it to remove the casings from the USB drives. But that's just one way that you can use the iFixit Toolkit. It really is the best friend of anyone who needs to get in and out of the gear that they want access to. Now, iFixit is a company that offers you free online repair manuals for pretty much everything. They have more than 10,000 repair guides for everything from electronics like your smartphone or your tablet to your games console, to your home appliances, your clothing, even your bike. They also have foolproof instructions to fix all your stuff. If you've ever shattered your iPhone screen, or in Shannon's case, the Nexus screen, you need to repair something like the Red Ring of Death, or you need to swap the batteries on your Galaxy S3. You need the right tools to do it, and iFixit has got you covered. Now, this is the ProTech Toolkit. We've shown this off on KnowHow a lot because this is our go-to set for everything we need to do with electronics. It's got 70 tools to assist you with any mod, malfunction, or misfortune that comes your way. Now, this toolkit is the gold standard for electronics work, from garage hackers to the CIA and FBI. But more importantly, they're unique tools. You just... Wow, okay.
I already got
Maybe we do have a... Oh, let me get that. Maybe we do have a know-how episode. Thank you, iFix. Oh, wow, that actually is really cool. We're going to plug that in.
Now, like a charm.
This kit includes a 54-bit driver kit. This is that thing right here. This is fantastic because if you've ever tried to take apart electronics, you know the frustration of not having quite the right bit. And when you use not quite the right bit, that's when you strip things, that's when you break things, that's when your project goes south. This kit has Phillips bit, Pentalobe bits, Torx and Torx security bits, Tri-Wing bits, which are very popular with video game consoles, and triangle bits, which are used for McDonald's toys. In other words, anything you want to hack, you can hack it with this kit. They also include an ESD Safe Precision tweezer set for delicate manipulation. Like, for example, whenever we're playing with these we're supposed to be using tweezers instead of our fingers.
Oops.
Although Brian will just pry things off because that's the kind of guy he is. They also include things like this anti-static ESD wrist wrap so that you can make sure that you don't discharge into the device that you're trying to fix. I've got nylon spudgers, metal spudgers, plastic opening tools for prying and scraping. And it's lightweight, it's compact, and it rolls up so that you can take it with you when you need to have it on the go.
Yeah,
it's only $64.95, and it's backed by a lifetime warranty. Hobbyists and home DIYer fixers alike, use this ProTech toolkit for doorknobs, eyeglasses, cabinet doors, sink fixers, and more. If you're looking for an addition to your toolkit, try this out. Go to iFixit.com and see if maybe this is what you need to take your DIY and maker spirit to the next level. Now, here's what we want you to do. With iFixit, you can fix it yourself. Visit iFixit.com/twit for more than 10,000 free step-by-step guides. iFixit also sells every part and tool that you'll need. Enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout, and you'll save $10 off any purchase of $50 or more. That's iFixit.com/twit. iFixit.com/twit. And we thank iFixit for their support of KNOWHOW.
So I got one of these.
I have your tweezers.
I got this as a gift for someone, and then I just never gave it to them.
I
just kept it.
I actually have one in my house that I got as a gift for my father.
And then
I gave him my old toolkit.
That's who it was supposed to
be
for
really
me, too.
Good. It was really good. It's like, he's not going to use half these tools.
I was like, I'm just going to have to keep asking him to borrow it, so...
Yeah. So you know what? We saved them time.
Yeah, and now we get to break things, so... Anyway.
All right, I fixed it. The spirit of giving. All right, now we have been playing with Project Lunchbox for the last couple of weeks. So we've been showing you how the motors work, how the servos work, how the transmitter and receiver works. Even the last episode, we got it to a rolling chassis.
Yes.
But now we need to give you the final integration. Here's step 5 of Project Lunchbox.
The last time we saw Project Lunchbox, we had just finished assembling the rolling chassis, complete with steering, shocks, and transmission. Now we need to complete final integration, the last step before our lunchbox is drivable. Let's start by clipping and installing the mounts for the lunchbox body. These are the posts that will allow the shell to be secured to the chassis. Clip the 4 mounting posts and install them on the corners of the chassis. Now let's install the power switch for the internal electronics. There is a small slot on the left side of the chassis into which the switch can be mounted. I suggest installing the switch with the on position towards the rear of the vehicle, so that ground debris cannot accidentally turn off your lunchbox. The TB-LE02S is a dual-mode electronic speed controller that supports both brushed and brushless motors. However, since it defaults to brushless local sensing, and the motor in the kit is a brushed can, we can only use 2 of the power leads, and we do not use the remote sensing cable. The first thing we need to do is to switch the mode on the ESC to match our setup. Holding down the setup button, turn on the power, and wait until the LED flips to red, then release the setup button. The LED will flash red, then green, then red, then green again. Press the setup button when it flips to green and it should rapidly flash green. Your ESC has now been set to brushed mode. It's time to get mounting. There's a piece of dual-sided tape in the kit that you can attach to the bottom of the remote control receiver and the electronic speed control. Mount the receiver on the pedestal just in front of the rising tail, then install the ESC on the tail itself, making sure to keep the power leads near their respective outlets. Thread the blue and yellow power leads from the ESC through the tail towards the transmission assembly, then connect the yellow and green leads from the motor to the yellow and blue leads from the ESC respectively. Now connect the steering servo to channel 1 and the ESC to channel 2 on the receiver. In addition to receiving throttle commands from channel 2, the ESC will supply power to the receiver through the same cable, negating the need for a separate battery pack. We're going to be crashing the lunchbox. A lot. And we need a way to protect the vulnerable steering assembly. The kit includes a bumper that screws onto the front of the vehicle to give us that protection. Now let's install the antenna whip. The whip will keep the antenna from dragging behind the lunchbox or getting tangled in the drive wheels. Thread the wire down through the chassis, then back up through the antenna mounting hole. You're going to need to thread the antenna wire through the antenna rod. I suggest using some of the kit's lube to ease the process. Once it's through the rod, snug the rod into the antenna mounting hole and pull the remaining slack through the top of the rod. Preparing the body is a simple matter of screwing in the sunroof, windshield, bumpers, and sideboards. Once the body is complete, lower it over the chassis, guiding the antenna rod through the body, and line up the mounting holes over the mounting posts. Your lunchbox is now ready to run.
Oh, Brian, I noticed it's really filthy now. I want to thank you for doing that to Project Lunchbox.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. I mean, sometimes you really got to put in the hours.
And you got it filthy on the inside, which that's a special kind of...
Yeah, it still smells a little bit, too, but...
What were you driving this through?
Sand, dirt, tar weed.
Oh, my God.
A lot of stuff. But it did really good. Like, it was awesome.
You know, that's why we got this one. It's a lot of fun to drive. It's not the easiest thing to drive.
Yeah.
It's not the fastest thing to drive.
It won't go robust
in a straight line, but it's robust. You can roll this thing over a couple of times, take it up and down a hill, and, you know, it's just it's kind of bouncy.
Yeah, well, I went out with some friends camping, and so we just, and the battery lasted for, you know, a couple of days. We played with it about 20 minutes at a time.
Did you bring the second battery?
No.
Wow.
No, just the one battery.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's cool when you see it on the sand, too, and it's kicking up
dirt
and stuff.
Yeah, it does a little
rooster tail.
It does bring out that inner six-year-old, where you're like, this is what I wish I could do with my real car.
Even watching the video, we started making, like, engine noises.
That's all part of the fun. Now, this is not it. We're not done with Project Lunchbox.
Ooh.
So we have put it into stock configuration. Now, the only thing that we've added so far has been the ball bearings, because those are kind of a pain to get to after you've actually assembled it. But there's a lot of aftermarket modifications that we're going to make to this.
The oil-filled shocks?
We got to do oil-filled shocks because it bounces around way too much.
Yeah.
It's really hard to control.
Yeah, that was the thing, is I was driving it through sand, and it was really uneven. So every bump, you were trying to turn, and it would just kind of hit something and it would divert from the line that you're trying to do.
Yeah, and and the other thing is it tends to be a bit unstable in the back. It makes it nosedive.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of mods that we can do to the transmission casing itself to give it a bit more stability so that you don't end up nosing the lunchbox into the ground again and again and again.
It did do a few flips out there.
It did. Now, we're also going to hand this over to your brother, and he's supposed to turn this really trashed, horribly messed up shell.
Spray it down before we give it to him.
Yeah, the people in the chat room are saying, you got to put a red racing stripe on that thing.
Yeah, that's like good for 5 more horsepower or something like that.
I also noticed that... The antenna is a lot shorter than it used to be.
Okay, so we might have to come up with some sort of modification for that, because When you flip the lunchbox as much as we did, it just, it snapped the antenna right where it sets with the case. So it was bound to happen.
It, you know, it's what it was.
That's why we
for.
Got two of them.
This is why we got two of these things. Now, this was a lot of fun, and we're going to continue with Project Lunchbox. We're going to show you some of the things that you can do to either your lunchbox or any 10th or 12th scale RC model. It's again, one of the reasons why we do this is because everything that you assemble on a remote control model like this does have an analog in the real world. If you want to know how transmissions work, if you want to know how ball bearings work, if you want to know how steering linkages work, this is a really good way to get started.
Very cool.
Speaking of getting started, you know how I start the day?
Snacks.
Snacks. That's kind of sad, but it's true.
Me too.
Yeah. No, I'm going to get in all seriousness for a while here. I obviously have some body issues.
Yeah,
I like to, I mean, for health-wise, I like to drop a couple of pounds. I'm totally honest about that.
Okay.
But, you know, one of the things that many people who try to lose weight, they make a mistake early on is, I'm just not going to eat.
Oh, yeah.
Just starve yourself. Stop. No. Which, for so many different reasons, doesn't
really
work.
Bad for you.
Yeah, it doesn't work on a physiological level. It doesn't work on a mental level because then you start thinking, oh, I was really good today. I didn't snack at all. I'm going to eat 7 hamburgers.
This sounds like a great decision.
This sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
No, but what we found is, you know, the people who are in the know tell us, no, snacking's okay.
Absolutely.
Snacking's good. You just got to make sure you snack on the right stuff.
Well, when I wake up in the morning, all I want is a cup of coffee and maybe just a little snack. I don't usually eat a big breakfast, and I need to snack through the day because I'm a type 1 diabetic.
Yep.
And my blood sugar goes down, but I don't want something really heavy.
Yeah, you mean, if you go to the back, let's be honest here. If you go to the back room where we've got the snacks for the Twit Army.
Yes. We have a variety.
There's like Nerds.
Those are Burks.
Those are Burks.
Burks
Nerds.
Yeah.
We've got like Skittles and all these sugar bombs that, they'll give you a quick boost of energy, but They're so bad for you. We also used to have a pantry full of Nature Box. I say used to because we ate them all. They're really, really good. And that's the second sponsor of this episode of Know How. It's Nature Box. When you're looking for something good to snack on, you got to stop by the Nature Box. Now, what is Nature Box? Nature Box is an easy way to get healthy snacks to your door each and every single week. What makes them healthy? Well, there's no high fructose corn syrup. There's zero trans fat. And there's nothing artificial. Nature Box sends great tasting snacks right to your door with free shipping anywhere in the United States. So here's how it works. You go to their website, you click on the continue button, and you choose between 3 subscription options. Then you place your order. Once you're a member of Nature Box, you can select which snacks you'd like in your monthly box. You can select by dietary needs, like vegan, soy-free, gluten-conscious, lactose-free, nut-free, non-GMO. That's actually really important for you because you need to have the non-sugary snacks. But what I like is you get to choose between flavors. I didn't know this.
The sweet, the savory, and the spicy.
Exactly. Yeah. Sweet, savory, spicy. That makes a difference. You know, sometimes I'm in the mood for something sweet, but more often than not, I kind of like that savory. Like, my favorite are the Santa Fe corn sticks.
Ooh.
I can't get enough of those.
Well, yeah, because I really wish I knew what they tasted like, because...
You know.
Yeah. No. You keep taking them.
Well, that's the first thing. Actually,
do they
have any? Because if they have them, they go straight in my debt now.
This is my breakfast right now.
Someone already took it.
Cup of coffee and the figgy... What was it? The whole wheat blueberry figgy bars.
Now, no matter what you're craving, you're going to find something to put in your Nature Box. That's what I like. It's that constant upgrading of their offerings. That's what makes Nature Box so Nature Box. So the next time you get cranky and hungry, or cranky hippo
cranky
and hungry,
hipper-ish.
And you're ready to eat anything,
don't forget. You know why that's my nickname?
Because
I didn't have any snacks.
Exactly. Now, with these snacks, you get something that's guilt-free. You get something that's good for you. Something like smoky pumpkin seeds or lemon pucker pistachios or dried pears and over 100 more healthy choices. So, folks, here's what we want you to do. We want you to go to Nature Box. We want you to pry one out of Brian's hands and get 50% off your first box. Just go to naturebox.com/twit. Stay full. Stay strong. Go to naturebox.com/twit. And we thank Nature Box for their support of Noel.
And the packaging is really good, too. Woo!
He likes having Nature Box ads just because he likes
it. I look forward to the part. Yeah, I get to eat and I get to throw things. What do you have next?
Coming up next. Okay, so we wanted to do a little something for people who want to download YouTube videos.
Right, because we had a way of doing it.
We had a way of doing it.
Not that long ago.
Yes, it was YouTube Center for Chrome. It was a fantastic solution. Basically, once you installed it, it would give you an extra button in the YouTube window that would allow you to download the video, download the audio, to get rid of ads. It was a really cool little feature.
Yeah.
But Google didn't like it. So the first thing they did was they made it so that every time you shut down Chrome, if you restarted, it would say, there's an unauthorized extension in here. I'm going to go ahead and disable it. Is that okay
for your own safety?
For your own safety. And we got a lot of feedback about that. And there was a workaround. The workaround was you kept a copy of the extension on your desktop. And so every time you started up Chrome, you just drop it back in.
Yeah, I guess that works.
It works.
It's kind of a pain. But,
it was annoying. Right. Well, now it just doesn't work at all. So they've changed Chrome just enough so the extension just it won't even load anymore. Doesn't matter how many times you try to fake it, you're not going to get the download box.
Right. But where there's a will, there's a Firefox browser.
Know-how?
Or a know-how. No. Yeah. That too.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we want to show you how you can use the exact same plugin in Firefox instead of Chrome. Mm-hmm. Alex, if you go ahead and drop over to my computer, this is just what Firefox looks like. So again, just like we did with Chrome, you're going to go to a GitHub for the YouTube Center. And this is what it looks like. Now, notice we've been getting this. We've been getting Chrome and Opera 15 extensions. This isn't really going to work anymore. In fact, if you look at this, the Chrome Web Store page, they finally, in order to get this usable on Chrome...
It's been disabled.
You know, if you lose the download option, then why would you use it? That's like the best thing ever. But the Firefox extension is still untouched. So if you go ahead and click the Firefox extension, it's going to go ahead and download one. Here's how you install it. This is super, super complicated. Pay close attention.
So we should have a banner saying...
Yeah, this is tough.
Danger.
This is tough. Okay, so check this out. I'm going to go...
Knowledge bomb.
Here's where the download went, right?
Okay.
So there's a 15-step process.
Straight to the desktop.
It starts with this. So we got to go to here. We got to go to add-ons. We got to go to these extensions.
Okay.
And then we have to take this.
Whoa.
And drop it in there.
Did you just drop it in there?
That's hard. It's super, super hard, folks. But yeah, it works. Now, if you go to YouTube.
Okay. Can you download the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Let's get this first
soundtrack?
One here, which we're not going to play because we don't want to have to give them any money. I now have my download thing back, and I can download in multiple resolutions. I could download audio only, and I can also stream. We have a guest in studio. He wanted to know if this allows for streaming. It does, because streaming is just downloading. It's another way for downloading. So this lets you download to your mobile device so that you could, say, just listen to the audio version in the car.
That's a beautiful thing, Padre.
It's a beautiful thing, and because Firefox is not owned by Google, it's not Chrome, they're not going to disable
this. That's such a weird situation, though, because isn't Google like the biggest contributor? Well, you know that probably the guys at Google feel the same way we do. And the only reason I use YouTube Downloader is for our own videos when I need to edit things out or make clips out of them.
Right.
What? Am I not supposed to say wink? No.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I use it for is whenever I'm going on a trip, I sometimes do want stupid cat videos. And I'll
or if you're going on vacation like I did and you know there's a set of videos that you want to watch, it's nice to have the option to be able to download it so you don't have to use up your mobile data or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Now, this does require you to install Firefox on your computer. And I'm sorry if you really don't want yet another browser, but...
Firefox is...
It's okay.
Yeah.
I still prefer Chrome for most things. It kind of frustrates me because it's like, hey, Google, you're not going to stop people from downloading YouTube videos, so why are you crippling your browser?
They're just probably trying to save face, you know.
I got face for... Okay, let's get away from that. So now,
we
that's
need
your
a Padre browser.
We do, right? The Padre browser is like, yeah, what do you want to do?
Yeah, do whatever you want.
I'm not going to stop you. I will look disapprovingly at you, but I'm not going to stop you.
I'm going to make you feel really bad about it.
There'd be like a little picture during the, you know, how they had like the loading. I'm just...
You shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
From the Jurassic Park gif, yeah.
All right, so this next segment is a little something special. Every once in a while, I find a product. This one I found at DEF CON.
Yeah.
And it came from a friend of one of my other shows, a man who's been a guest on This Week in Enterprise Tech many times. They started a new company called IDUS Networks, ITUS. And they're creating a small box that goes between your router and your broadband provider.
Right.
And it gives you enterprise-class security. Now, there's going to be a lot of people who... say, well, what does that mean? And that's why last week we had a chat with him. Every once in a while, a product will come to my attention that is that proper combination of the maker spirit and good old-fashioned corporate know-how. That's the case with the iGuardian. This little box goes between your broadband provider and your home router to give you enterprise-class security for a home router price. Now, to explain what this iGuardian does, I brought on Daniel Ayub from IDIS Networks here to talk about a brand new product that they're kickstarting. Daniel.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for coming back. I've had you on one of my other shows this week in Enterprise Tech. You used to work for SonicWall, which is one of the avowed masters of security. And now you've started a new company with its own Kickstarter. Can you tell me a little bit about this?
Sure. So we're really trying to take a lot of the business class security that you'd find in the commercial firewalls that cost several hundred to thousands of dollars and provide that in a very easy to use form factor that's affordable to be able to market it and go for families.
What does that mean? Because sure. I hear that all the time. I hear enterprise class security in a box and blah, 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 and it's only this expensive. But what does that mean?
Sure.
So what are the enterprise features that you wouldn't normally get in, say, a decent, a high-end router that you might buy at Fry's or Best Buy's?
Absolutely. So the biggest thing that you're going to find here is that it's actually an inline intrusion prevention system. So not only are we processing the packets and letting them in and out, but we're actually looking at the data payloads and inspecting the contents of every packet coming through the system. If there's a pattern of known attacks for an exploit or a vulnerability that is being exploited, we're able to identify that and then block that malicious code from reaching its intended target. If we see a system on the trusted network that is infected, we can identify the outgoing command and control traffic to a malware server or to a known Trojan botnet or something like that, and we can actually sever or block those connections as well.
Okay, so not only are you protecting the computers from malicious attacks outside, but you're keeping, say, infected computers from the inside from hitting computers on the outside.
Exactly.
Which would kill off a botnet.
Exactly, okay. And it'll also prevent your personal data from leaving your home network in that respect.
Isn't that what my WRT54G open source software would have done 10 years ago? What's different?
Sure, so the commercial routers that you're talking about, the consumer off-the-shelf type routers that you'd buy from a big box store like a Best Buy, Fry's, the Linksys, D-Links, those are basically all utilizing stateful packet inspection firewalls. And that's the same technology we've used for about 25 years now. It probably came onto the scene in the late 80s to early 90s. It's something that's a pretty mature technology, but again, it's really just looking at, is this connection that went out allowed to come back in? It's not actually inspecting the contents of the data coming through that connection. So if there were, for example, your Linksys router, if you were to click on a malicious link, say you got a phishing email or you got targeted in some way and you were to click on a link that you weren't supposed to, your Linksys router is going to have no problem letting that malicious content into the network. It's not actually inspecting the traffic to know that this is an attack. It just knows that you requested this data, so it's going to allow it back in.
But in order to do what you're suggesting, it means that you're doing some sort of signature defense, right?
Absolutely.
You're actually looking at the type of traffic, and you're looking for specific patterns that would denote an attack. That means you have to update the signatures. Is there some sort of signature update program for this?
Absolutely. So the Kickstarter edition, we're aggregating the community and open source GPL2 rules. We convert them to a drop, serve it up as a download so that our backers are able to pull that down on a daily or a weekly basis on an automated fashion. So the box will self-update itself in that respect. If you're an advanced user and you want to subscribe to a third-party service, such as Emerging Threats or SourceFire VRT, you have the ability to also add your own custom rules or your third-party subscription to it as well.
This is a DIY show. This is a
Absolutely.
Maker show. So they're going to want to know what actually goes in here. What kind of hardware goes into a consumer-level enterprise security product?
Yep. So we're actually using the same type of security processors that you'd find in a large enterprise firewall. So somebody like a Palo Alto Networks or a Juniper, they're using the same type of security processors that we are. The difference is they're using a 24-core or a 48-core, and we're using a dual-core version of that chip. Now, that type of CPU is special for this type of application, okay? It's a dual-core MIPS CPU that's able to also has an integrated application acceleration processor. So it can actually do layer 7 inspection, regular expression matching, PCRE matching at a very, very fast rate to offload the CPU so that you can do inline IPS inspection. Now, in terms of what's under the hood in this, the hardware, as I mentioned, is that Cavium Octeon CPU, but the software that we're utilizing is 100% open source. So we're using OpenWRT as the base operating system.
Okay.
And then Snort is the inline intrusion prevention system. The production version that we're making for the Kickstarter, the compute power that you find in that platform compared to some of the commercial firewalls that are out there, we're providing about 2x the compute power at about 1/10 of the price. So it's a very, very powerful platform in the sense that, and it coupled with the open source, it really makes it almost endless, the possibilities of what you can do with the thing.
Yeah, you mentioned the price, which means now I have to mention the price.
Yeah, so the Kickstarter edition, we have them online for $149 as the target price. The MSRP will be $179, okay? But the nice thing about this also is we're providing lifetime access to the community and open source rules that are available today online. So if somebody wanted to go and build their own snort box and use the open source community rules, that's something they can do. You'll typically spend $300, $400, $500 just on the appropriate components to build the computer, and then you're going to spend your entire weekend basically configuring it and hoping that it works the way it's supposed to. We've really kind of simplified that and tried to provide a platform that's very powerful, very flexible, but still affordable, so that the hackers and the tweakers that want to kind of play with it, it's open for you to be able to do that.
I don't think we call ourselves tweakers.
Sure. Okay, let's say the hobbyists and the hackers, that want to be able to play with it and get at the underlying operating system and configure it as they see fit, it's completely open for them to be able to do it. But also trying to make it easy enough that somebody like my mom can literally just plug it in between her modem and her router and have an adequate baseline protection.
I like that. So a nice basic level of plug it in, get protection.
Exactly.
But also, if you've got the skills, you can kind of poke around and
customize
it. All right. Daniel, thank you so very much. Where can they find this? If they want to contribute to the Kickstarter and get you on your feet and get this thing built, where did they go?
Sure. So in order for us to be able to bring this to market at an affordable price, we need to pre-sell or produce at least 1,000 circuit boards. That's so that we can get the price under $149 to be able to sell it at an affordable rate. So we have it on Kickstarter today. We're about a third of the way towards our goal. And if you go to itisnetworks.com/Kickstarter, it'll redirect you to the page. Also, if you go to itisnetworks.com and click on the banner on the homepage, it'll take you to the Kickstarter page.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
Daniel Ayoub, ITIS Networks. If you want some enterprise security in your home, check out the little white box. Now, Bartman in the chat room actually has a really good question. He wants to know, well, what if your modem and your router are one and the same?
Right.
We covered this before. I hate when they do that. And it's so difficult for you to find a provider that will give you just the modem. It's like, I don't want any routing.
It's getting harder and harder, yeah.
Yeah, because why? Because they like
they
the ability
want the control
to reach in,
order.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, there are some providers, and actually go to our YouTube, our Google Plus page, because some of our users pointed out the different ISPs that give you the option of a bridge mode, where like there's a certain port you can plug in, or there's a certain feature you can access,
and it redirects the traffic.
It kind of turns off the router.
Ah, okay.
Kind of, not really, but
you're quotation marks around that. Yeah,
right. What you don't want to do is you really don't want to go from like your router / modem to this to another router. You don't want a NAT. That's a pain in the butt. But, yeah, so you want to make sure that you can actually use this device on your network.
Right.
But what I love about this is it's open source. So you know exactly what's running on this thing. You know, I'm a big proponent of open source. There's no security through obscurity. All the tools that run on this box, I could run on my laptop right now.
Right.
It's running Linux. It's running Snort. And it's using definitions for signatures that you can readily access. The difference is, I was trying to put together a machine that would do something like this because some of the know-it-alls wanted a router that could do this sort of function.
Because we have talked about the packet sniffing with the hub and the differences between a switch and a hub and stuff like that. But this, I like this because it seems like a natural progression of security.
Exactly.
And without having to upgrade your router, you can have some of the security that you wouldn't be able to get without spending a ton of money.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, there are going to be people who say, well, why not just build a PFSense router? That would work.
Okay.
work.
Yeah, right.
But that would cost 2 to 3 times more than this.
Right.
And you would have to upkeep it. This is a dumb box.
Yeah.
This goes in line. It updates its own definitions. Mm-hmm. If you get the Kickstarter version, it means you get a lifetime access to all those definitions. And if you've ever used an enterprise product, that's the part that's expensive, the continual licensing. Mm-hmm. This is buy the product, have access to the community, you're done.
That is so cool.
Yeah. You brought up a question.
That's what I was just about to ask. It was because I think we need to start monitoring the traffic going out of our networks a little bit more. And would this be a way of detecting the USB, the bad USB hack?
And I thought about it, and yes, because one of the things that we talked about last week when we talked about bad USB is since you can't see the memory, you've got no visibility.
The only way you can find out if something like this is happening is monitoring your traffic.
Yep, exactly, the behavior. And that's what this works on. Hmm. He was trying to explain this in the video, which is the router you've got, it does really well in stateful packet inspection, which basically means I'm going to block off all the ports unless your computer requests access on that port. Well, if your computer is owned, it's going to request access on that port, and the router will just go, okay, sure.
Yeah, no problem.
This doesn't do that. This actually does deep packet inspection. It looks at layer 7, and it says, what are you doing, and what are you asking for? And it's going to go, no. This looks like bot traffic, or this looks like a dump of system memory. I'm not letting this through.
Yeah.
If you want to, I think IDIS's slogan is to secure your Internet of Things. So if you want something to secure your Internet of Things, this is a really good option.
Yeah, I like it. It's a cool idea. Did you back it? Or?
I did. So I want to
play with one.
I got one. I backed it.
Yeah.
And I've asked the guys at IDIS, I'm like, could you please help me? The one that they brought in, that was a prototype. So that was a 3D printed case. It was a prototype board. But Brian Chi, who is my co-host on This Week in Enterprise
Tech. I remember him mentioning it,
He's got a prototype as well, and right now he's blasting it with all the tools he uses to test enterprise gear.
We should get Raphael Mudge one, too.
Take a look. Yeah, why not? Let's do that. All right.
Cool.
Now, that, I know that was a lot of material that we had for this episode.
But don't worry.
Why?
Because we have show notes. Very detailed show notes that you can find at twit.tv/KH. That's where all our episodes live. You can subscribe, download, and like we were saying, go through the show notes. Because in these episodes, we cover a lot of stuff.
We do.
And we don't want you to get lost, so we provide links for you. And what else?
The manifests of everything. Like, for example, with the lunchbox build, we're going to show you where we bought it. Yeah. We're going to show you what mods we're going to make to it. We're going to show you where you could find the Kickstarter for IDIS Networks. Mm-hmm. We're going to show you, what steps we used and links we used to do the YouTube Center for Firefox. Yeah. So if you've ever wanted to do something that we've done on this show, we've probably given you step-by-step instructions to do it.
We're just trying to help fill that knowledge hole.
Fill the knowledge hole.
But,
that's what we do here at Know-How. Knowledge hole.
But if you're looking for more of a social interaction, you can always go to our Google Plus page. I don't think the link's working for
the
it
The link
right
shortener
now.
Doesn't work. So you know what? But go on to Google Plus and just look for the Know-How group.
Yes.
We're 7,000 plus members strong. And
the Know-How Army.
The Know-How Army. The know-it-alls. The best part about the Know-How Army is that even if Brian or I aren't answering your questions, there's probably going to be someone in there who can.
Right.
It's a great place if you're a DIYer or a maker to get started. There are no stupid questions. There are only stupid graphics.
And we have plenty of those. But you can also, find projects and post your own stuff there, too. And probably the best way to get a hold of us is on Twitter.
Yeah, because if you send us an email, we're just going to forward it to Jeffrey.
Yeah, well, Jeff loves email.
Yeah. So. You can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's at PadreSJ.
And I am at @cranky_hippo.
Yeah.
Definitely follow. Almost said Brian Burnett on Twitter.
Follow us. Talk to us on Twitter. It's a really good way to get input into the show. If you want to see something in a future episode, or if you're upset with something, talk to us on Twitter. We love to talk to our fans. We love to talk to our audience.
You can see what we're up to on a day-to-day basis, like building a know-how lair.
Right underneath. Oh, thank you. Oh. Right under our feet. In fact, see, that ceiling is where we're standing on right now. We probably shouldn't be showing this because we didn't tell Neil Laporte about this, but we've carved off an area of the basement that's going to become the know-how lair. I like lair much better.
Yeah, I like the know-how lair.
The know-how lair.
And Alex is the director, so he's keeping an eye on everything.
I was working.
Taking a nap?
I was working. I was working. The best thing about this is that the basement's filled with boxes, so we're making a wall that looks like boxes, so we could slide it into position.
It'll be like the Batcave. You know how he rolls up and then...
Yeah.
You're giving away all the secrets, though.
the no cave. The no how cave.
The no how cave?
We'll come up with
that.
We'll
figure something out.
Also, thanks to our TD, NL3, Alex Gumpel, who he works his butt off every week.
Does he?
Yeah,
I guess.
It's nice to have a real TD.
That's right.
The Twitch.
Should we say how to follow him on Twitter?
We should. You can find him at ANELF3.
Yes.
Make sure to follow him and tell him what you want to see us do, because he can make that happen.
Yeah.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know...
Go do it. Go. Go. Go do it. Get out of here. Get out. We're done.